We're holding on Kuf Ches Amud Aleph, fifth line. We're still talking about what the Gemara was still talking about. The Mishnah had told us that Samoch L'Mincha, a half hour before the time of Mincha on Erev Pesach, you're not allowed to start a Suda. So we were discussing whether that means Mincha Gdola or Mincha Ktana. If it's Mincha Gdola, then we said the reason is not because it'll ruin your appetite, because if you eat that early in the day, it's the Pashtus, it's not going to ruin your appetite. It's because in the time of the Bais HaMikdash, they brought the Korban Pesach during that time, and you don't want that you're going to get involved in your meal and you're going to be careless and not bring the Korban Pesach, or as Tosfos says, maybe rush through it. On the other hand, if we say it's Mincha Ktana, then we say it's in order not to ruin your appetite. So far, what we said was that based on a braisa that mentions what Agrippas would do, where we said that Agrippas would usually eat much later in the day than regular people, even he on Erev Pesach is not allowed to eat later. So we said that we ended up saying that, yeah, what it means is, even if we say that you're not allowed to eat Samoch L'Mincha Ktana, the point with Agrippas is you would think that he should be allowed to start Samoch L'Mincha Ktana because that's his normal time, because only shortly before that is the normal time when he eats. So even if he extends his meal past Samoch L'Mincha Ktana, then it's not going to ruin his appetite for the Seder that night, no more so than it ruins his appetite for his dinner on a regular weekday. And we said, no, Kamash Malan, that even he can't. But yes, so far what we said is it means Samoch L'Mincha Ktana. So now continuing on that topic of when you have to stop eating on Erev Pesach. So the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes have a Yosef B'tan Nisa Kol Mala Yoyim D'Pischa. Rav Sheshes would fast the entire Erev Pesach. Actually, Tosva says doesn't specifically, one possibility is it doesn't mean specifically like accepting a fast, like he would accept it in Mincha the day beforehand, like a full-fledged fast. It just means that he would be careful not to eat. Or another possibility Tosva says is maybe he actually would literally accept on himself a tainis in Mincha the day before. That way he'll be sure not to eat. By the way, you also have Tosfos mentions in this connection the matter of the Bechorim fasting on Erev Pesach, which of course we know that minhag exists, but the Bechorim try to hear a siyum or otherwise go to a Sudas Mitzvah in order to not actually have to fast. In fact, the Yerushalmi, the parallel Yerushalmi to our Gemara, tells that Rebbe used to also fast on Erev Pesach. And the Yerushalmi there discusses one possibility, maybe is because Rebbe was a Bechor, and therefore on Erev Pesach he had to fast. Although the Gemara there ends up shooting it down and gives a reason, as we're going to learn in our Gemara over here. So the question is, going back to Rav Sheshes, why is he fasting on Erev Pesach? Neima kasavar Rav Sheshes, should we say that Rav Sheshes holds, not like we said before, samuch l'mincha gdoila tanan, that when we say in our Mishnah that you're not allowed to eat samuch l'mincha, it means samuch l'mincha gdoila, that means from chatzoisin on, so that already would cut out from chatzoisin on, so okay, why isn't he eating in the morning? So then first of all, so we would say mishum pishahu, so the reason would be, as we learned yesterday, because it would interfere with the Korban Pesach, dilma mimshach, because he might get involved in his meal. It might take much longer than he expected. But also imnuri milamevid pischa, and the reason then is because it might prevent him from bringing the Korban Pesach. Now, of course, Rav Sheshes lived a couple of hundred years after the Korban. Nevertheless, Tosfos says, if we say that that was the reason for the Isser, then that Isser still continues to exist nowadays. Now, so far, that would explain why Rav Sheshes is not eating from Chatzos and on. What about the morning? We might say also we could also say then that he holds like what Rabbi Oshia says in the name of Rabbi Lazar. Now we have like this. We learned earlier in the Masechta that the Korban Pesach is one of those korbanos, the other one being the Chatas, which you have to shecht l'shmoy, and if you shecht it shaloy l'shmoy, it's possible. Unlike most other korbanos, where if you shecht them shaloy l'shmoy, the korban is kosher, and you continue doing all the avodas of the korban. You just don't, it's not just the owner is not yotze with it. So now, in the Mishnayos and Zvachim, you have an opinion of Ben Beseira that says that also if a person shechts the Korban Pesach in the morning on Erev Pesach, then and he shechts it l'shmoy, then it'll be kosher, but if he shechts it shaloy l'shmoy, then it'll be possible. Now, so there's two ways of understanding what Ben Beseira means by that. Does he mean that actually the Korban Pesach actually would be kosher b'dieved if you actually brought it in the morning, and therefore that is considered, even though he agrees, Tosfos says he agrees, l'chatchila, you have to bring it in the afternoon, But he would say that b'dieved, if you brought it in the morning, it is a kosher to Korban Pesach, and you can roast it and eat it that night by the Seder, etc. So the usual rules of a Pesach apply. You shecht it l'shmoy, it's kosher, and if you shecht it shaloy l'shmoy, it's pasul. Unlike, we would say, according to the Chachamim, who disagree with him, they would say, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, that a Pesach that's not shechted during the time, during Erev Pesach afternoon, becomes a shlomim, and a shlomim, the rule is, whether it's l'shmoy or shaloy l'shmoy, is still kosher. So one way of understanding Ben Beseda, again, is to say that he actually holds that b'dieved, if you shechted the Korban Pesach in the morning, it would be kosher. The other possibility, the Gemara says over there, is maybe not. Maybe he agrees that if you shechted in the morning, it's possible, but he says there's a special thing because part of the day is the time for it as a Korban Pesach. So therefore, at least as far as the dinim of Shlishmoy and Shalei Lishmoy, that extends to the entire day. The Rambam, by the way, paskins like Ben Beseda in that regard. Not that you can bring the Korban Pesach in the morning, but that if you did offer it in the morning, l'shmoy, then it would be kosher. And the Rambam paskins, according to the detail, that if you shecht it shaloy l'shmoy in the morning, it's pasul. Unlike if we said that it's considered a shlomim at that point, it would be kosher. The Ravid, of course, argues on the Rambam and says, what are you talking about? How are you passing on Ben Beseda when the Chachamim go against him? Okay, the Kesef Mishnah says, because the Gemara there has a long discussion about the pros and cons of Ben Beseda's opinion, including this point that we're mentioning here from Aboshia, that shows, says the Rambam, that the halacha is like it. Anyway, so if we assume that the correct explanation of Ben Beseda's opinion is that Kihada Amar Rab Oshia Amar Rab Elazar is like what Rab Oshia says in the name of Rab Elazar, Machshu Hoya Ben Beseda, the Pesach Sheshach De Shachris Ba'Balas Alishmai, that Ben Beseda would hold that a Pesach that was offered in the morning of Erev Pesach Lishmai is actually kosher. So not like the second answer in the Gemara over there that he agrees it's possible, and just he says as far as the dinim of Lishmai and Shaloi Lishmai, we'd say that in the morning Shaloi Lishmai is also possible. So no, we would say that he holds that at least B'dieved, you could actually bring the Korban Pesach in the morning, which would umit safras man pischahu, meaning that Ben Beseda would be saying that from the morning already is a valid time to bring the Korban Pesach. De kula yoma chazal pischa, he would hold that the entire day is suitable to bring the Korban Pesach. De savar, because he holds, now we know, what makes us say, the majority opinion, the chachamim, who say, and everything that we've been learning so far in this Masechta, that says, that you can only offer the Korban Pesach from Chatzos and on, was all based on the idea that the Pasuk says Bein Ha'abayim, that you have to, and Bein Ha'abayim literally means between the evenings. Rashi on the Pasuk explains, in other words, that you have, there's a first evening when the sun starts descending, it's in its highest point in the sky at Chatzos. Then from there it starts descending towards the west, and then eventually it sets below the horizon. So the time between those two times is called Bein Ha'abayim. So now Ben Beseda, according to Rav Oshia's understanding of Ben Beseda, we would say Desava Bein Ha'abayim means Bein Erev De Esma L'Erev De Ha'idna. It means between the end of yesterday's night and today's night. Meaning the end of yesterday's night, the end of the night that goes into your daledness in his way, is at Alois HaShachar. When is the beginning of the night of your following your daled is at Shkia. So Rav Oshia says that Ben Beseda would hold that that any time between Alois HaShachar of the 14th and Shkia of the 14th is a valid time to bring the Korban Pesach. Now again, Tosfos says he would say that maybe l'chatchila you shouldn't, because he agrees that you should only bring the Korban Pesach once chametz is gone from your possession, and we learned in the first parak of our Masechta that midaraisa that only kicks in at chatzos. So he would agree that l'chatchila you shouldn't be shechting it in the morning, but he holds that b'dieved in the morning it would be kosher. Well then, in that case, if we put all that together, if we say again that Rav Sheshes holds that in our Mishnah, the reason why not to eat after a certain time is in order not to prevent you from bringing the Korban Pesach, and if we say that he holds like Rav Oshia's understanding of Ben Beseda, that even in the morning you could bring the Korban Pesach and it would be kosher, and he also holds that the halacha is like Ben Beseda in that, then the result would be that you can't eat the entire Erev Pesach day because of this problem, because it would prevent you from bringing the Korban Pesach. So is that Rav Sheshes' reason? So the Gemara says, Amri. So they answered in the yeshiva, Loi, that's not the reason. Shining of Sheshes, the istinus haba. The difference is Rav Sheshes was an istinus. He was a very delicate person, and he had only a small appetite to eat toim but safra midi. If he would taste something in the morning, then even in the evening, it would still ruin his appetite for the evening, and he wouldn't be able to eat l'teyoven. Since we said the reason why, for most people, you have to stop eating, you can't eat bread or matzah, whatever, after a half hour before mincha ktana, because then it'll ruin your appetite for the Seder. And the same way we said, even if you're eating other things like meat or fruit or whatever, you shouldn't eat too much of them so as not to fill up. So in Rav Sheshes' case, that his digestive system was such that if he ate in the morning already, then it would ruin his appetite for the evening. So therefore, in order not to ruin his appetite for the Seder, he had no choice but to not eat the entire day. The Yerushalmi there ends up saying that same thing is true as far as Rebbe. When we say that Rebbe would not eat the entire Erev Pesach, it wasn't because he's a Bechor. He was a Bechor, but that wasn't the reason. The reason was the same as we're saying over here about Rav Sheshes, because he was an Istinus.
So what would Rav Sheshes do when Erev Pesach fell on Shabbos? He would still fast all day?
That's a good question. I guess the answer would have to be yes. You're usually not allowed to fast on Shabbos, it is true. But for example, you're allowed to fast a Tainus Cholam on Shabbos, even though you're allowed to fast a Tainus Cholam on Shabbos, because there you're doing it for a constructive purpose. Okay, you have a din that then you have to fast on a different day to make up for the fact that you fasted on Shabbos. But in Rav Sheshes' case, he's doing it also for a constructive purpose in order to be able to eat the Seder with an appetite. So there, in order to be able to eat matzah by the Seder with an appetite. So therefore, I guess even if Erev Pesach came on Shabbos, he would do it, I guess. I mean, the Gemara doesn't say one way or the other.
Well, maybe the constructive purpose works only for the Tanis. It doesn't work for Shabbos. Who says that it works for Shabbos?
No. What I'm saying is you're allowed to fast on Shabbos when it's for a constructive purpose. For example, a Tainus Cholam. In the case of a Tainus Cholam, what it is the Gemara mentions it, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, a person is so worried and so upset over the bad dream that he had, that for him, not eating that day is more of a Tainug, is more of Onug Shabbos than eating. So maybe in the same vein over here of Sheshes, since he's doing it for the purpose of being able to eat matzah l'teyavon, then therefore for him it's more of an oneg Shabbos to not eat than it would be to eat. Again, I don't know. The Gemara doesn't say one way or the other. Maybe on Shabbos he would just eat a tiny bit in order just to be yotze, the bare minimum of oneg Shabbos, and then, I don't know. We don't know. The Gemara doesn't tell us one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go on. The Mishnah had said, "Vafilu onish b'Yisrael lo yoichal ad sheyaseh." We said in the Mishnah that even the poorest Jew should not eat on Pesach night unless he reclines, because we said at the beginning of the parak, reclining is derech cheirus, the symbol of being free, rich people. So even a poor person who never does that during the year, but on Pesach night he has to. So now let's figure out what parts of the Seder require haseba. Itmar. So we said as follows: matzah tzorech haseba. When you eat matzah, then you need haseba, because matzah, after all, is a zecher of the geula. Because after all, the whole point why we eat matzah is because kigoshu mitzrayim, that they left Mitzrayim, they were sent out of Mitzrayim in a hurry, and the dough didn't have time to rise. So therefore matzah represents geula, and therefore you have to lean when you're eating it. Most of the poskim say that this is talking about when you're eating the matzah, the first matzah by motzi matzah, and also the afikoman, because after all the afikoman is zecher for the korban pesach. There's different opinions whether you have to lean also by korech or minhagas that we do. And then you have, if you're eating matzah at any other time during the meal, then you don't have to lean for that. We're talking about the matzah that you're eating for the purposes of the mitzvah. Okay. So that requires a seba. Morer ain't sarech a seba. On the other hand, when you're eating morer, you don't need to lean, because the whole point is the morer is a symbol of the slavery. So there's no reason to lean. There's no reason to show while we're doing that it's derech cheres. What about yayin? What about when it comes to drinking the four cups of wine? So itma mishmeder Reb Nachman tzorech haseba. So some talmidim said in the name of Reb Nachman that Reb Nachman had said it does require haseba. The itma mishmeder Reb Nachman ain't tzorech haseba. Then other talmidim said in the name of Reb Nachman that it doesn't require haseba. So what's going on? What did Reb Nachman actually say? The answer is the Gemara says v'loy pligi. They're not actually arguing. Ha betauti kasi kamoi. Ha betauti kasi basroi. It depends. One is talking about the first two cups, and the other one is talking about the last two cups. Now, which ones then are we saying that do require haseba, and which ones do not require haseba? So he didn't specify. And therefore, amri lo lahai gisa v'amri lo lahai gisa. Among the chachamim in the generations after Reb Nachman, they said two possibilities. You could go one way or you could go the other way. Amri lo lahai gisa. Now, you could go in one direction and say like this, tre kasi kamoi bo haseba. You could argue that only the first two cups require haseba. Dahashtahu dekamas chalocheros. Because now, in connection with the first two cups, the cheros is beginning, the freedom is beginning. We're talking about during that time, we're talking about the geula. We're saying the haggadah. So that would be a time when we need to lean. But you would argue tre kasi basroi lebo haseba. You would argue though the third and fourth cups don't require haseba, because you could say maida hava hava. What's done is done. You already demonstrated chayrus when you were say in connection with the cups of kiddush and the haggadah. Now you don't need again to show that you're b'nei chorin. With the last two cups. Now, of course, after the last two cups is first when you're eating matzah. But Tosfos says, first of all, matzah is more of the main thing of the Suda, more than wine. So therefore, we have to demonstrate cheros with it. And also, the fact is, with wine, if we're going to argue according to this logic, you already lean by the first two cups. So you don't really need to show it again, leaning by the last two cups. And also, after all, as we said before, the matzah intrinsically itself is a symbol of geula. So that could be a reason to argue that you only need to lean by the first two cups. And then by the last two, you would say, okay, we already demonstrated cheiros. It's already a done deal. We don't need to keep on demonstrating it. But amri lo lahai gisa. On the other hand, some say that Reb Nachman meant the other way around. Adarabba tre kasi basroi bo haseba. Just the opposite. You could argue that only the last two cups require haseba. Because hahi shaita de kahavya cheiros. Because that at that time is when the cheiros took place. That's when, so you have the beginning of the night, we were still slaves in Mitzrayim. And then chatzoi salayla. And there was Makas Bechoros, and Pare said, and Pare told the Jewish people to leave. So Adarabba, the end of the Seder is more when you're talking about that now the end of the Seder is not necessarily after Chatzos, but still, the point is that at that point, there's more Cheros, and there's more reason to show Cheros towards the end of the Seder, when we're focusing on that at the beginning of the Seder, we're focusing on Avodim Hayinu. Tre kasi kamoi lebo haseba. In the first two cups, you should argue on the contrary. We don't need a seba. Da'akati Avodim Hayinu karma. Because after all, what's the keynote of Magid? The beginning of it is Avodim Hayinu. So we were slaves. So therefore, that would be a reason not to have to lean by the first two. Only after we finish off Baruch Atah Hashem, Gar Yisrael, then it's appropriate maybe to have to lean. So two different opinions of which pair of cups you have to lean by. So the Gemara says, "Hashta de itmar hachi be itmar hachi." So now that we said one way and the other way, and we're not sure what Rav Nachman meant. So the bottom line, "Aidi va'aidi bo haseba." Both of them are going to require haseba. All four cups, you're going to need to do haseba. Now, the four cups and the whole concept of haseba is only derabanan. Usually we say suffolk derabanan lakula. Why all of a sudden over here would be machmir and saying to do all four? So the Maharam Chalava says, look, okay, yeah, it's true, it's derabanan, and you could be meikel, but listen, I mean, there's no tircha involved in leaning, so just lean, and just lean, you know, better to do what you should do when there's not much tircha in it. And the Ran mentions that reason, and he gives another reason as well, because given that we have the suffix, if you were to say you're not going to lean by the first two, because you're going to say maybe it's only the last two, and you're not going to lean by the last two, because you're going to say maybe it's the first two, then you're mevatel the whole concept of haseba, and the chachamim wanted that you should be doing haseba while you're drinking the cups. So if the choice is between doing it between saying suffix that abon on the kula and not doing it by any, versus doing suffix that abon on the chumra and doing it by all four, then in that case we're going to go lachumra, because otherwise you have no haseba at all. Tosfos brings up the point. Now, what happens if you drank one of the cups without haseba? do you have to drink it again? So Tosfos says on it, Tzorich Iyun, whether you would have to. So in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about like this. Now, there is a wrinkle in this, namely that there are a couple of Rishonim, there are a couple of Balei HaTosfos, the Ravan and the Rav Yah, that are brought by different Rishonim, that say that nowadays, Bechlal, we don't have a Chiyuv of a Seba. Because the argument that they make is that nowadays, even rich people, even the most rich and pampered people, don't eat Behseba, they don't eat reclining. Everybody nowadays eats sitting. Okay, you might have like an easy chair where you lean back, but the Gemara is going to say soon that's not considered haseba. Only leaning to one side is considered haseba, and nobody does that nowadays, and they didn't even do that in the times of the Balei HaTosfos. So therefore, there's an argument that a couple of Rishonim make that nowadays we shouldn't be required to do haseba at all. Now, the halacha is not primarily like that. We do have to do haseba when we're eating matzah and when we're drinking the Dalad Kosis. However, it is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch as a possibility, therefore, that if you drank one of the cups without leaning, then maybe you shouldn't drink another one, because you do have a problem called moisif alakosis. You don't want it to appear like you're adding to the cups. Now, technically, we learned yesterday, you are allowed to drink more wine between any of the cups except between the third and the fourth. But practically speaking, we don't do that nowadays. Nobody drinks an extra cup between Kiddush and the cup of Magid. So if you drank an extra cup during that time, then it would look like you're adding to the Kosis. Plus, also the Alter Rebbe mentions a point, you would also have the problem, what are you going to do as far as a bracha for it? You didn't have that extra cup of wine in mind when you made Kiddush and said Bor Pri HaGofen. So now you'd have to make another bracha on it. And should you be doing that? So therefore, so in Shulchan Aruch it mentions that b'dieved, if you drank most of the kosis without a seba, then you don't do them again. It does mention that maybe what you should do is have in mind by Kiddush, in case you do drink more wine between the first and second, and that covers that problem at least. But if you drank the third cup, if you drank the second cup, the one of Magid, without leaning, then you should drink another one, because then there's no problem of moisif ala kosis. You're allowed to drink as much wine as you want between the second and third kosis. A bracha is not really going to be a problem either. There's actually opinions in halacha that you don't say a bracha on the second cup anyhow. So, but the other ones, because of these various sfeikas, and because of the opinion of the Ravan and the Rav Yo that you don't need to anyway, then b'dieved, you don't need to drink them again, so you don't have this problem of moisif alakosis. When it comes to matzah, then you don't do that. Then we just say, eat another kezayis of matzah, the haseba.
How do you explain that we have to drink the haseba as a sign of freedom when we're still in galus and we're in the deepest galus we've ever been?
But on the other hand, we were celebrating the Geula from Mitzrayim, and that was a Geula that Geula had a permanent effect from then on. Even though in various times and places we are avodim, we're not intrinsically avodim. The Maharal develops this whole idea in great detail in a sefer of his called Gvuras Hashem. Different other achronim talk about different angles of it. Before Yetzias Mitzrayim, we Jewish people were like any other nation, that we could intrinsically become avodim. Now, what happens is, after Yetzias Mitzrayim, never again are we intrinsically avodim. It can happen for a period of time that we're avodim to various nations, but we're more in that sense like a ben chorin who got captured and is temporarily in slavery. It's not his intrinsic metzius. You have that in halacha, for example. You know, you think of it, an eved ivri, for example, his master doesn't own his guf. Only an eved knani is his master able to own his guf.
It's worse than being eved avadim to another people. We are avadim to ourselves, and we don't even see.
That's
not fine.
That we're avodim to ourselves, and therefore Pesach is the time to realize that our intrinsic metzius is free people. Our intrinsic metzius is that we're avodim, that we're kilibne Yisrael avodim avodayhem, that we're avodim of Hashem. Fine. The fact is, even if a person is not on that level yet, the whole point of the Seder is to evoke that idea within him. The Sefer Achinuch mentions in connection with the mitzvahs of Pesach, and he mentions it many other times in his Sefer, Ha'odam a person acts in a certain way, even if they don't feel it yet, the action itself evokes a certain mentality in him, and you do it over and over and evokes that mentality in you. So therefore, doing the mitzvahs of Pesach, acting as B'nai Chorin, and drinking the wine and eating the matzah or whatever, and then and so forth. It evokes eventually over time, it evokes in a person a feeling of chayrus, a feeling of that I'm not, that intrinsically I'm not a slave to Olam Hazeh and to the Goyish nations. Intrinsically I'm an Eved of Hashem, and therefore I'll work to actualize that in my life.
Granted, but another important point is that we end the Seder by saying Lashon Haba, the Aradei Yisrael. Right, the Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. We cannot be the Cherus, and we still are Vadim as long as we are outside Eretz Yisrael.
Even when we're in Eretz Yisrael, we can still be Avadim, but you know, the people in Eretz Yisrael are no less in Golos than we are. That's why we're saying there was a Geula from Mitzrayim, and that was the first stage. Now we're looking forward to the last stage, but nevertheless, there's still what to celebrate. That's what I'm trying to explain, is that it's not that there was a Geula accomplished in Mitzrayim, but then whatever was accomplished in that Geula was undone by the later Golis. No, there was a certain aspect of the Geula of Mitzrayim that is never undone by any subsequent Golos. The fact is that now it made us into a new Mitzius of a free people. Of a
Even
people
the
that are not subjugated anymore to Mitzrayim or to any of the Mitzrayims of later times. So even though Begashmius, we may be subjugated to them, and even to a certain extent Beruchnius, a person may be subjugated to them, nevertheless, there exists that Mitzius of being a free person underneath that all, and at a time like Pesach, that can come out.
Even with the example of the Holocaust, you would say that...
Even the Holocaust, even everything, yes. That still, the Mitzios of the Jewish people is that we are Avdei Hashem, V'loi Avdei Paroi, and that's what we celebrate on Pesach, yes. If you wanted to talk about it, then let's talk about it later, because now let's continue. Let's continue, but we can talk about it later if you want. Okay, continues the Gemara. Here's some rules about Haseba. Prakton loishmei Haseba. Sitting or lying down, prakton, is not considered haseba. Now, there's two possibilities what prakton are. In Tosfos explains that prakton means lying face up. The Rashbam also explains that prakton means lying face up. Now, there are other places in the Gemara where it seems to imply that prakton might mean face down. So Tosfos says, in fact, Rabbeinu Hanan over here says that way. So Tosfos says can't be. You wouldn't eat like that with your head down. So necessarily it has to mean lying on your back. So lo shmei haseba, that is not considered haseba. That's not the way that bnei chodin eat, lying on their back or lying on their stomach. Also haseba yamin lo shma haseba. Also reclining on your right side is not considered haseba. Because again, the reason why not the right is because then adraba, it's a hassle, because you eat with your right hand. So therefore, if you're leaning on your right, then you constantly have to move and reposition yourself in order to be able to eat, and it's a bother to do that. Therefore, that can't be called derech cherus. And not only that, the food might go down the windpipe instead of the esophagus, and then you're going to be in danger. Rashi explains that this Shema Yachdim is referring back to the first one about a person lying on his back. If a person is lying on his back, then the food is more likely to go down the wrong way, because the shipui koiva, in English it's called the epiglottis, which usually covers up the windpipe when you're eating to prevent food from going down that way. When you're lying on your back, the epiglottis is hanging upward, and therefore it doesn't block the windpipe, and food might go down that. So Rashi says that this Shema Yachdim Kona Lavesh is referring to why you shouldn't do a seba on your back. Not only it's not derech cheres, but it's also dangerous. The Rashbam says, one second, if that's what it meant, then why doesn't it put that right after prakton loishma haseba? Why is it first putting in between hasebas yamin loishma haseba? So the Rashbam says, no, it's referring to that. Another reason why not to do haseba on the right side, number one, it's inconvenient, because it means that every time you're going to have to reposition yourself in order to eat, but also because the windpipe is closer to the right side of your body, the esophagus is closer to the left side. So if you eat leaning on your right, then the food is more likely to go down your windpipe. It's a little bit hard to understand what the Rashbam means by that. In fact, the esophagus is really pretty much behind the windpipe. But okay, it's you know, there can be reasons why there can be reasons why if you're leaning on your right, the food is more likely to go down the wrong way. So therefore, so those are reasons why not to do Haseba on the right. The post can talk about, by the way, what about a lefty? Now, the reason that it's inconvenient, adarab, if he leans on his left side, it'll be more inconvenient because he has to reposition himself all the time to use his left hand to eat. On the other hand, the reason that we're saying over here in the Gemara, because of Sakana, is going to apply equally well to him, because after all, his esophagus and his windpipe are in the same positions as they are with a righty. So the consensus of the poskim is that even for a lefty, he has to lean to his right because the reason of Sakana takes precedence over the reason of comfort. Continues the Gemara, Isha Eitzel Baila Leiboya Haseba, a woman eating together with her husband does not need Haseba. The Rashbam says the reason is because of Emas Baila, because of the respect for her husband, she's subject to him. So like it's not respectful, it's not derecheros for her to be leaning in front of him. By the same table as him. The Rashbam brings from Shultus to Rabachoi, from one of the early Goinim, that in general women don't have the minhag to recline when they eat. Men in those days had the minhag too, but women didn't. There is a good deal of discussion about the pros and cons. Well, actually, let's continue the Gemara first. The im isha chashuva hi tzricha haseba. If she's an important woman, then she does require a seba, because if she's important, then she, so now the question is, so what if she's important? The Rashbam's first reason that emas baila aleha should still apply. So one answer, in fact, Rabbeinu Manoach says that isha chashuva in this context means a woman who herself is the balas habayis. She's widowed or divorced or never married or what have you. So therefore, she would require haseba. Another way of looking at it, based on what the Shultis is saying, that the reason is because women usually don't do haseba in the first place. Well, an isha chashuva, even if she's married, still she's the kind of person who usually would recline, and therefore she needs to on Pesach nights. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that, again, because you have the opinion of the Ravan and the Rav Yo that we mentioned before, that Bechlal, nobody needs to do a Seba nowadays. So we're not knowing that in practice. But because based on that, women are knowing in general nowadays not to do Haseba because there's so much on that opinion that nowadays nobody needs to do Haseba anyway. So even though it says in Shulchan Aruch all women nowadays are considered Isha Chashuva, therefore they require Haseba, but many people are so much on this opinion of the Ravan and the Rav Yah that you don't need to. So the Maisa, you go to people's starim, you can find different people do different things. By many starim, the women do recline as well, and they're according to that, they're required to, because we say nowadays all women are considered isha chashuva, and by others you'll find that they won't because they're makel on themselves based on this opinion of the Ravan. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Bein Eitzel Aviv Boya Haseba. A son who's eating together with his father needs to do Haseba. He has to have covered and motor for his father. But the Rashbam says, Lo have a kof of kokach. He's not so subject to his father as a wife is to her husband. So therefore, that's not reason enough to pater him from Haseba. So now we have a question. Talmud Eitzel Rabbi Mai. What about a Talmud having the Seder together with his Rebbe? Should he lean or not? Toshma, Omer Abaya. So we can prove from the fact that Abaya says, Ki Havenon Beimar, when we used to be in my Rebbe's house, whenever in Shas Abaya says my Rebbe, without specifying, he means Rabbah, who was his uncle and who raised him and was also his Rebbe. So when we were in Rabbah's house and we would make the Seder, there wasn't enough room for everybody to lean properly. Zaginan abirki dahadadi, we would lean on each other's knees. So each of us would put our elbow on the, or our arm on the, our left elbow or our left arm, whatever, on the next person's knees and lean over that way. By the way, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that is a valid way of doing Haseba if you don't have a couch or pillows or what have you. What it does say in Shulchan Aruch is you shouldn't do Haseba leaning your arm on your own leg, because that doesn't look derecheros. That just looks like a person would do when he's worried. But to lean on somebody else's, on somebody else's lap or somebody else's leg, that would be fine, as we're saying in the Gemara over here. So that was, Abaya said, we used to do that all the years that we made the Seder in Rabbah's house. Then Kiyasin and Labei Rabbi Yosef. Then when we came to Rabbi Yosef's house, after Rabbi passed away, Rabbi Yosef took over as the next Rosh Hashiva. So then Abaye says, we Talmidim used to go for the Seder to Rabbi Yosef's house. Omalon, so he tells us, you don't need to do Haseba, actually, since you're by your Rebbe, because Moira Rabba, Kamura Shamoyim, because as it says in Pirkei Avos, the fear of your Rebbe should be like the fear of Hashem. So therefore, in other words, you're considered kafuf, and therefore you don't have to lean. So Tosfos actually brings up the question, what if a person's father is also his Rebbe? So Tosfos says, first of all, I mean, on the face of it, then yeah, he should not have to lean also, because after all, it's his Rebbe. Why should the fact that he's his father as well make the motor of him any less? On the other hand, Tosfos says, listen, I mean, the fact is, a father usually teaches his son Torah, and yet we say that the son has to lean in front of his father. So most of the other Rishonim say that, listen, you know, we assume a father is usually moichel on his covered, and therefore the son can lean. So yes, even if the father is his son's Rebbe, then the son can still lean over there, because we assume the father is moichel on his covered. As far as the Rebbe also, it says in Shulchan Aruch that if the Rebbe wants to be moichel on his covered and allow the Talmidim to lean, then he can do so. He's not required to, which is what Rabbi Yosef is saying over here. I'm not required to be moichel on my covered to allow you to be mekayim the mitzvah of Haseba, because you murder Rabbah, kamura shamayim. But if I wanted, I could be moichel to you, and then you would be allowed to lean. It mentions, by the way, in Yemei Bereshis, which is a sefer that describes the events that during the year after the Friedrich Rebbe's Estalkus, during the year when the Rebbe was resisting accepting the Nasius. So there's a sefer describing the events of that time called Yemei Bereshis. It mentions that year, the Rebbe held the Seder that year, and actually for the next 20 years after that, the Rebbe held the Seder upstairs of 770 in the Friedrich Rebbe's old apartment. You had Rebbe Tzindachamadina was there, the Rashag was there, etc. They had a place set for the Friedrich Rebbe, but as if the Friedrich Rebbe is still there. When it came to Haseba, though, the Rebbe did do Haseba, and somebody asked him why. I mean, we're saying over here that you don't do Haseba in front of your Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, you know what? When it comes to things of halacha, Torah loy b'shamayim. So yes, we can consider as though the Friedrich Rebbe is here, but Haseba is a matter of halacha. There's no playing around with halacha. Therefore, yes, for that purpose, we have to consider my Rebbe is not here, begashmius, and therefore you have to do Haseba as usual. Okay. So the Gemara says, so we just said that a Talmid doesn't do Haseba in front of his Rebbe unless his Rebbe gives him rishus. So the question is, Mesvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Imakol Odom Mesiv, a person has to lean, has to do a Seba when he's eating the Seder together with anybody. Ba'afilu Talmud Eitzel Rabbi. Even a Talmud with his master, with his Rebbe, needs to lean. So we see that he does need to lean. So what are you telling me that not? The answer is, Kitanyahi B'shoya Denagri. That's not talking about a Rebbe in Torah. That's talking about a Rebbe in carpentry, for example. So a person, you have an apprentice carpenter or some other craftsman. He's learning by somebody. He's boarding by him while he's learning how to be a carpenter or whatever. And therefore, so now he's having the Seder together with him. So he doesn't have to have such murder for him, because he's not teaching him Torah after all. So therefore, he has to lean. But yes, a Talmud of Torah by his Rebbe would not have to lean, as we said before. So now they ask the question, what about the waiter? Does he have to lean? Now the fact is, he's gonna have to get up and down all the time in order to serve the food. In fact, actually, when we talked before about a woman not having to do a seba, another reason that some of the Mefarshim give why she shouldn't require a seba is because usually the women are the ones who serve the food. So again, they're constantly going to have to be getting up and down. So therefore, a seba wouldn't be derecheres for them. It would be more of a hassle that they constantly have to reposition themselves, which would be a reason why, according to that explanation, when we said before that an isha chashuva does require a seba, the reason would be because an isha chashuva is somebody who has servants to be able to bring the food to the table. So therefore, she can recline there the whole time and not have to get up. Okay, so now the question is, what about a waiter? He's constantly having to get up and down. Does he need to do a seba while he's eating the matzah and while he's drinking his dalad kosis? Tashma, the Amar Rabbi Shor ben Levi, Hashamash Ocho Kezayis Matzah, Krumesiv Yotzah. If the waiter eats just one kezayis of matzah while he's reclining, then he's yotzah, implying Mesev Ein Loi Mesev Loi. So only if he eats it while he's doing a seba, then he's yotzah. If not, then not. Shmamina, Boy Haseba. So that proves that, yes, even the waiter requires a seba during the parts of the meal where he's going to be sitting down. Shmamina, so okay, that proves it. So the bottom line is, again, that you need a saber doing the matzah, doing the dalad kosis. You don't need it doing moro, we said before. You also, according to most minhagim, including ours, you don't need to doing karpas. You do it in Korech. As far as the rest of the meal, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you want to eat it Beheseba, you could. You're not required to. It's only the things that we just mentioned that you're required to. As far as saying the Haggadah, there it says Fakert. It says in Shulchan Aruch, don't be saying the Haggadah Beheseba. Say it sitting straight up, because after all, you're saying words of Kedusha, and you should be saying them Be'emo of Yira, and not reclining like casually. Continues the Gemara. V'amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Noshim chayavas ba'arba'a kosis alalu. Women are also chayav in these four kosis. You would say it's a mitzvah sesa shazman grama, and usually women are potter from such things. The reason is sha'af hein hoyu ba'osea nes, because they were also involved with that nes. Now, what does that mean? Rashi and the Rashbam both say what it means is the Geula happened through the Noshim. The famous expression, Nebeschus Noshim Tzidkonius, Beschau Noshim Tzidkonius, of that generation, the Jewish people were taken out of Mitzrayim. So they have a reason to drink the Dalad Kosis as well. Tosfos says that's not what the Gemara means. The expression, Afhein Oyuboisanes, implies mainly it was the men, but it was also the women. If you're saying that it was in their schus, then Adrabba, it was mainly the women, and only as a secondary thing the men. So Tosfos explains that no, what it means is that the fact is the women were in the same danger as the men. You had the same way, for example, when it comes to Purim, women are chayev as well. The gzeira of Haman, lahashmid, laharug, la'abid, applied to the men and the women and the children as well. The same thing, in Mitzrayim, all of the shibud and all of the gzeiras and everything applied to the women as well as to the men, and therefore they have to drink the dalad kosis as well. It's interesting. It's interesting, by the way, in the Gemara over here, Rashi mentions the reason behind the Dalad Kosis is that you have as far as the reasons behind the Dalad Kosis we'll talk about later, actually. So women are chayev in all four kosis as well, because afhein ho yubosanis. Okay, continues the Gemara. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. The four kosis have to have in them the amount of wine that could be used to mix a good cup. Now, kos yofa means the kos of birkas hamazon. Rashi explains that what the Gemara assumes that what Shmuel means is like this. In those times, their wine was very thick or syrupy or strong in taste or whatever it was exactly. And therefore, as we know all over Shas, they had to dilute it with three parts water. So Rashi explains, the Gemara is assuming for purposes of discussion that what Shmuel means is like this. You have a kos of birkas hamazon, it has to be a revius. Therefore, if you need a revius total of drinkable wine, then it means you pour in there a quarter of a revius of raw wine, of undiluted wine, and then you dilute it with three quarters of a revius of water. So in other words, it starts out that you start out with a quarter of a revius of wine for the cup of birkas hamazon, and then you dilute it with water. So the Gemara assumes, according to Rashi, that Shmuel means that when it comes to the Dalad Kosis, between all of them, you have to have only a quarter of a revius of undiluted wine. And then when you dilute it, then you're going to have, between the four of them, you have one revius of wine. So it would mean that each one, you only need 1/16 of a revius of raw wine, and then you dilute it. And then you have, for each one, you have a quarter of a revius. So later on, on the Amud, the Gemara is going to revisit that and then figure out if that's actually what Shmuel means. But for the moment, that's what we assume that Shmuel means. The Rashbam explains differently. The Rashbam explains that no, the Gemara knew the whole time that he means that you need a full revius for each cup, and that means you need a quarter of a revius of wine in each one, and then three quarters of a revius of water. The Gemara is later on going to ask on the lashon that Shmuel is using, because mezigas kos yofa suggests a different size cup than a regular revius. Okay. Continues Shmuel. Shosan chai yotza. If you drank the four kosis as undiluted wine, Meaning, in other words, again, we just said that you usually have to dilute it with three parts of water. But if you didn't, you just drank it undiluted, yotza, and you're still yotza the dalad kosis, says Shmuel. Shos and bavas achas yotza. Also, if you drank them bavas achas, then you're also yotza. Bavas achas, Rashi explains, means that you took the four cups, you poured them all into one big cup, and then you drank down that cup. So we'd say that you're yotza. The Rashbam says, come on. I mean, if you have them all in one big cup, then of course that counts as only one cup. A cup is a cup regardless of the size of it. No, the Rashbam says, and Tosfos agrees, Bavasachas means, let's say you were to drink them all one after the other. So instead of doing one after Kiddush and one after Magid and one after benching, as we usually do, instead you just drank them one after the other, then you were Yotze. So, let's analyze, and the Braisa continues, Shmuel continues, Hishkamehen Labonov Labnei Beisoi. If a person gave his children or his wife or other members of his household to drink from that cup, then they're Yotze, meaning he didn't drink the whole thing, he only drank some of it. And we're going to see soon how much that some of it is that he needs to drink. So now let's analyze everything that Shmuel said over here. We said shosan chai yotza. We said that. So the mezigas kois yofa we're going to deal with later on. We're going to deal with the actual size of the koisis and how much wine you need and how much water you need. That we're going to deal with soon based on a braisa. But first, we're going to have some statements of Amoraim that clarify some points that Shmuel said. So we said shosan chai yotza. If you drink the wine undiluted, then you yotza. Omarova yidei yayin yotza yidei cheiros lo yotza. Actually, what it is you weren't completely yotza. You were yotza the mitzvah of wine. You weren't yotza the mitzvah of cheiros, meaning you didn't do it in the proper way. Now, what do we mean by that? First of all, we're talking about the Rashbam stresses. We're talking about only the kind of wine they had in those days. Nowadays, our wine doesn't need dilution, so therefore you don't have this issue. But what do we mean yidei yayin yotza? So the Rashbam explains what it means is, we're going to learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that you have to have Simchas Yom Tov, and part of the Simchas Yom Tov is drinking wine. So therefore, you were Yotze that. But you weren't Yotze Cherus, the Chachamim wanted that you should drink four koses, Derech Cherus, and drinking them wine, you weren't drinking, no, here actually what we'd say is you were drinking Dalad Koses, you were Yotze, the mitzvah of Dalad Koses, because you did drink four cups, each in its proper place, but because it was undiluted, and therefore it's much stronger than you would usually drink the wine, then it's not Derech Cherus, meaning you didn't do the mitzvah in the real proper way. Then when we said shosan bavasachas, we said if you drank them all at once, then he said you yotze, which again Rashi had said means you pour all four of them into one big cup and then drink it down. And the Rashbam and Tosfos say it means that you drank them one after the other, not in the order of the Seder. You just drank them one after the other. So when we say you yotze, Rav Omar, so Rav says, or on the side it says over here, that Rava Omar, yidei yayin yotze, yidei abar kosis lo yotze. You were yotze the mitzvah of wine, meaning that you were yotze, that Rashbam says, and Tosfos agrees, it means you yotze the mitzvah of simchas yom tov, the fact that you drank wine and you accomplished simchas yom tov with that, yidei abar kosis lo yotze, but you're not yotze, the dalad kosis, because the Chachamim wanted you to drink it in the proper order. So all of those count as the kos rishon for Kiddush, and then you still need three more kosis after that. By the way, the Shagas Aryeh points out an interesting thing over here. We learned earlier in the Masechta that the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov really doesn't begin on the first night of Yom Tov. It really only begins by day. We talked about over there that the Simcha of Yom Tov is accomplished by bringing shlomim and eating them, and you can't do that by night. So, but over here, we seem to be saying that you yotze the mitzvah of simcha by night, implying that there's a mitzvah of simcha by night. So he says, okay, maybe derabanan, there's a mitzvah of simcha. Maybe derabanan, there's a mitzvah of simcha by night. Or maybe what it is there's a difference between the real simcha is with shlomim, but nowadays that we don't have shlomim, then instead we yotze with wine. So that applies by night as well. We'll talk more about that tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Okay, fine. When we said Hishka Mehen Labanov Labnei Beisei Yotza, when we said that if he gave to drink from his cup to his children or to his wife or other members of his household, then he's Yotza. Amar of Nachman Yitzchak Vuhudi Ishti Ruba Dekosa. That's only if he drank most of the kos. Now, what do we mean by most of the kos? Tosfos says that it means, like we learned a couple of days ago, meloy lugmav. It means a cheekful, which is most of a revius. So l'chatchila, you have to drink a revius, but b'dieved, if you drank only most of the revius, then you yotze. There are a number of other rishonim who learn, though, that no, what it means is, regardless of the size of the cup, l'chatchila, you're supposed to drink the whole cup. B'dieved, what you can do is you can get away with drinking most, the majority of the cup. So in other words, if you have, let's say, so a revius, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, is a little over 3 ounces. Let's say you have a 6 ounce cup. So according to those Rishonim, l'chatchila, you would have to drink the whole 6 ounces. And b'dieved, if you drank a little over 3 ounces, then you'd be yotze. But according to them, it wouldn't be enough to drink revius because that doesn't constitute the majority of the particular cup that you're using. Our minhag is that we drink the entire cup, regardless of the size of it. But yeah, if a person is gonna have a hard time with drinking wine, then they will then make sure to begin with to use a smaller cup. Make sure to use a cup that's as close as possible to a revius in size, in order that then you don't have to do that. Then at least even if you're drinking the whole revius, it's not gonna be too much for you.
A revius is more than 3 ounces.
A revius, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, is, well, so the figures that he gives in his own Sfarim is just over 3 ounces, 3 ounces and 16 grains. I know, I've been hearing people quoting in the name of Rav Ozdeba and in the name of other Rabbanim of Crown Heights that it's actually 2.9 ounces. I'm actually not real sure where they're getting that from, because Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah himself says just over 3 ounces. So I don't know. But whatever the case, so okay, even 2.9 ounces. The point is, so if you're gonna have a hard time drinking wine, then fine. Don't get a 6 or 7 or whatever ounce cup. Make sure you get a cup that's as close as possible to 2.9 ounces, and that way you'll be able to drink the whole thing. Because l'chatchila, you should be drinking the whole thing. We're saying only b'dieved if you drank roiv kos, then you're yotze. And by the way, when we're saying over here that everybody else, when we're saying that he's yotze, the question is, what about them? Are they yotze? So one idea of it is, if we're talking about a cup that's only a bare revius, and he drinks meloy lugmav, which is roiv revius, then practically speaking, they're not going to be yotze anyhow because they're drinking less than roiv revius. So again, according to that, we have to be talking about where there's a cup here larger than a revius, and he drinks roiv revius, and therefore there's enough left for them to be able to drink roiv revius as well. With that said, you have Tosfos at the beginning of the perek discusses maybe only the one who's leading the seder is chayev and dalet kos. Maybe the rest of them are not. Lamaisa, of course, nowadays we have plenty of wine available, and you have, you know, for those who have a hard time of it, you have the various stock organizations that make sure that everybody has plenty of wine, so you make sure that everybody has dalet kosis. Okay. Meisvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. Now, we said before, again, that Shmuel had said that you need mezigas kois yofa for every person, which according to Rashi meant that we assume that with each, that the four koises between all of them need to contain a revius. So you start each one off with 1/16th of a revius of wine, then you dilute it with 3/16ths of a revius of water. So now you have each cup constitutes a quarter of a revius, and between the four of them you have one whole cup. But a Braisa says, Dalad koises alalu, tzorach shiyehe ben kedei revius. These four koises have to have a revius in them. In other words, each one needs to be a revius. And also Shmuel had said that it's fine to drink them undiluted, but the Braisa says echod chai ve'echod mazug, whether you drink them undiluted or diluted, echod chodosh ve'echod yoshan, and it doesn't matter whether the wine is new or old. Old wine that Ashbam explains, there's two possibilities. One is old wine means that the taste of it is weakened. Now you have, sometimes you can age wine and it improves with flavor, but only if you know how to do it. Otherwise, if you keep wine around for a long time, eventually the taste of it starts weakening. So we're saying, even so, as long as it still has the taste of wine, then you're allowed to use it for the dalad process. Or the other possibility that Ashbam says is maybe the other way around, that new wine, meaning like grape juice, doesn't yet have the flavor of wine, and still the Braisa is saying you can be yotze with it. So Rabbi Yehuda, it's sorach sheheba tam umara yain. Rabbi Yehuda says it has to have the taste of wine and it has to have the appearance of wine. Meaning, in other words, Rashbam says, Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with the Tanakhama. You can't use Yayin Chodosh because it doesn't have the taste. So according to him, you couldn't use grape juice. You couldn't also Yoshon. It can't be too old wine because then it's lost its flavor of wine. And it would have to have the appearance of wine, which many Rishonim say means that ideally it should be red wine. We're going to learn it. We're going to learn in a few lines an expression that shows that wine lachatchila should be red. Anyway, the point is katoni mias kedei revius. So the Braisa says you have to have kedei revius So the Braisa is saying you have to have kedei revius. So according to Rashi, the question is that kedei revius implies that the four of them all together need to have that each one needs to have a revius, and Shmuel is saying that you only need to have rova revius, that you only need to have a quarter as much. So v'at amet koisi offer. You're saying that you need koisi offer. So Amri, so they answered Aidi v'Aidi chad shiurahu. Shmuel and the Braisa both mean the same thing, meaning my kedei mezigas koisi offer. The Ka'amar, when we say that you need mezigas koisi offer, the amount that you would use to mix a nice cup, meaning the cup of birkas hamazon, l'chol chad v'chad. It means that each one of the four koisis has to have that shiur. Dehavilu kula revius. So it means that each cup is a revius. So not like we assumed that it means you start off each one with 1/16 of a revius, and then you dilute it with water, and each one now comes out to be a quarter of a revius, and then between them you have a revius. No, what the Bright Shmuel meant, the same thing as the Bright says, saying, meaning that you start out with a quarter of a revius of wine for each one, you dilute it with 3/4 of a revius of water, and therefore each one comes out to a revius by itself. And between the four kosis, you have one whole log, 4 revius. That's according to Rashi. The Rashbam learns differently. Again, the Rashbam learns the Gemara never assumed to begin with that Shmuel means such a small amount, 1/16 of a revius of wine per cup. The Gemara knew the whole time that Shmuel means a revius, but the expression kois yofa seemed to imply a different amount. And the answer was that no, kois yofa is just a way of saying a cup that contains a revius. Okay. Now we said Rabbi Yehuda Omer Tzorach Shehebe Tam Umar. Rabbi Yehuda had said that it has to have the taste and the appearance of wine. Omer Rava my time of the Rabbi Yehuda. So where does Rabbi Yehuda get that from? Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, a Pasuk in Mishlei, Al Tere Yayin Ki Yis Adam. Don't look at the wine when it's red. In the context of the Pasuk, because it's warning a person not to overindulge in wine because it has bad effects on a person. But the point is, we see from that Pasuk that there's an association. Good wine is red wine. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying it should have the appearance of wine, means that it should be red. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings that. L'chatchila, you should be using red wine for the Dalad Kosis. Another reason, in fact, is because it evokes the memory of the blood of the Mitzriim, the Mitzriim that were killed in Makas Bechoros and in the other Makas. However, the Taz says, in times and places where there were blood libels, and therefore it was dangerous to use red wine, so in places like that, they would use white wine instead. So as far as using grape juice, by the way, based on the Gemara over here that was saying chodosh, so some of the poskim say that you could use grape juice. If you can't stand wine, then you can use grape juice. Not everybody agrees to that though. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Hakol Chayovin Ba'abar Koisis Halalu. Everybody is Chayiv in these four cups. Echad Anoshim Be'echad Noshim Be'echad Tinoikis. Men as well as women, as we said at the top of the Omud, because Afhein Ho Yabois Anes. And also children, because after all, the children were taken out of Mitzrayim as well. Omud Rabbi Yehuda V'chimat Te'elas Yesh the Tinoikis Be'yayin. So Rabbi Yehuda says, what are children going to get out of wine? So the Rashbam explains the question is, children are potter from mitzvahs, so why are you obligated to give them wine? Other mafoshim explain, the question is rather that, fine, we're talking about kids of the age of chinuch, let's say, but still, wine is not a matter of simcha for them, it's not a matter of derech cheirus, so why are you giving them wine? Ella, so Rabbi Yehuda says, rather, what you do is for them, derech cheirus, mechalken lahen kloyes ve'egoizim be'erev Pesach, you give out to them toasted grain and nuts. The grain, Rashi and Rashbam both point out, would have to be old grain, because this is before the Omer is brought, and Chodosh is still Aser, but you would do that, you'd give them treats like that on Erev Pesach, kedei shelo yishnu, in order that they don't fall asleep, v'yishalu, and this way they'll ask the manishtana. In fact, one explanation is it's not even so much that they shouldn't fall asleep. Bichlau, you do many things differently on Pesach night in order that the kids should get curious why we're doing things differently, and that will stimulate them to ask the Manishtana. So actually, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that kids of the age of chinuch, you do have to give them dalet kosis. Obviously, if you can give them grape juice, then you do that. But the kids of the age of chinuch, they are chayim and dalet kosis. But in addition, we also have what we're saying over here that you give them kloyes vergozim and other such treats like that in order to stimulate their curiosity and get them to ask the manishtana. In fact, the Gemara continues, Omru olav al Rabbi Akiva, shoy machalik, kloyes vergozim, l'tunikas bera Pesach, kudosh lo yishno v'yishalu. They said about Rabbi Akiva that he would do just that. He would give out toasted grain and nuts to kids on Erev Pesach in order that they don't fall asleep. And this way they'll stay awake and they'll ask the Manishtana. And this way, b'chlal, it'll whet their curiosity and they'll ask, why are we doing things so differently on this night? So more on this. Tanya, we learn in a brayse. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, chotfin matzas b'leile psachim b'shvil tenoikas shel yishnu. We grab matzas on Pesach night so that the kids don't fall asleep. Now, what does this chotfin matzah mean? There's a lot of different explanations. Rashi brings two explanations. One is that we take away the ka'ara in order that they should ask, and we do that before Manishtana. We have the matzahs uncovered for Heilach Manya. Then we cover them for Manishtana. And the reason in the olden times they would actually take away the table, as we learned before in the Perek, that they have the small tables by every person, so they'd actually take it away, and that would make them wonder. One second, we haven't even started the meal yet. Why are we already clearing the table? And that'll get them to ask. Another explanation, Rashi says, chotfin matzah means we eat quickly because we don't want to make the seder take too long, because then the kids are going to fall asleep. Then the Rashbam gives another explanation. It means, now usually you eat a lot, you start feeling sleepy. So what you do is the kids eat, and then as soon as possible after that, you take it away from them and not allow them to eat more. So they're not even full yet. And that way, first of all, that way they won't fall asleep from overeating. And second of all, it'll make them curious why all of a sudden, you usually let me eat as much as I want, why all of a sudden are you grabbing the food away from me? Then there's yet another explanation about chotfin matzah, is that this Gemara is the basis for the minhag that many people have of stealing the afikoman. Because chotfin matzah, like they grab the matzah and they hide it in order that now they're stimulated to stay awake. Now they want to wait until tzofun so they can hold the matzah for ransom. So our minhag is not to do that, as the Rebbe says in the Haggadah, because we don't want to train children in the idea of stealing. But those who have that minhag is based on this Gemara, chotfin matzah b'leil psachim, that we grab it, that we do things like that in order to keep the kids entertained and involved and everything in order that they don't fall asleep. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Omru olavar Rabbi Akiva. They said about Rabbi Akiva, in this connection, talking about that we try to hurry and do the Seder as soon as possible, which is also, we have the famous Nusach that we say by Kaddish, when the Tata kumta heim von shul, machmen bald Kiddush, kidei de kinder zol nisht einschlof, and zol fregen de manishtana, that we want to have the Kiddush as soon as possible in order that the kids don't fall asleep. And so the same manishtana is also based on this Gemara. So Rabbi Akiva, mi yom avloi omer higia eis lamed b'beis medrash, in all his life, when he was teaching Torah, he would never say it's time to end the shiur and leave the Beis Medrash. Chutz me arev psachim ve'erev yom kippurim, except for erev Pesach and erev yom kippur. The erev Pesach b'shvil tenoikas kadesh layishnu. On erev Pesach, the reason was in order that the kids shouldn't fall asleep during the seder. So therefore, so the Rashbam explains that one possibility is that it means that Rabbi Akiva would send the Talmidim home early on Erev Pesach so they can get their kids to take a nap during the day. So that way they can get the kids to take a nap. That way they'll be awake and alert for the Seder. Or the other possibility that Rashbam says, it means that he would tell them to go home and finish the learning as soon as possible on Pesach night rather than learning into the night as they usually would, so that they can start the Seder as soon as possible and the kids don't fall asleep. Tosfos prefers that second explanation, because the first explanation, what do you mean? It's not dafka the fathers that need to put the kids down for a nap. The mother could do that just as well. So no, the second explanation, then it means that they should, instead of learning into the night, that they should stop early in order to be able to start the Seder on time. That's the primary explanation. And for Erev Yom Kippurim, Kadesh Yachilu Espneim, and also Erev Yom Kippur, Rabbi Akiva would dismiss the Talmidim early so that they can give their kids to eat, and they themselves can eat before the fast, because otherwise, because we know there's a special mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So we'll continue. We'll continue tomorrow talking about dinim of how we're talking about dinim of a person with his family. How he's mesameach them on how he's mesameach them, which will tie back into what we said before about drinking wine. That you accomplish simcha with wine, and then we'll also talk about tomorrow the actual amount of wine. What is the definition of a revius? There's going to be a little bit of math involved as well.
Uh oh.